and welcome to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. Today in the show, we're going to talk a little about tiling in crop, but we're going to get to your questions as well in the Ag PhD mailbag here in just a minute. If you've got a question for us, you can email us, radio@agphd.com. You could also send us a note on X, Ag PhD Media, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. Or you can give us a call, 844-44-AG-PHD. All right, so a couple things real quick with tiling in crop. I just want to say, first of all, if you need drainage improvement, there is no substitute for drain tile. Yep, you can try a lot of things, and certainly there are things that can help improve the drainage on your farm, reducing compaction, having good calcium levels, doing everything you can to build soil organic matter. All those things are great. They really are. But tiling's by far the best. It's the best money we've ever spent on our farm. We put tile in just about every field we've got now. I think in every field we've got now. And I would say that the majority we've done in crop. Yes, we've done a bunch after harvest and a little bit before planting in the spring. But we did so much years ago in crop. Now, you might say, well, wait, I got to do a bunch of pattern tiling. Okay, if you have extensive pattern tiling to do, like we've had a couple fields where we're doing 20-foot spacing, something like that. Yeah, we're not doing that in crop. But for a lot of these spot tile situations, which we have because we have rolling hills, we did a lot of that in crop. It really wasn't a big deal. Get it when the crop is less than a foot tall, you will find you'll have almost no yield loss, and then it's done. And that's the big thing, is getting tile done as quick as you can. Because even think about fall. If you don't do it now in crop, well, what happens come fall if it's a wet fall? Well, then you're mudding the crop out. Yeah, I mean, we just have had so many issues over the years getting stuck and mudding things in and out. And oh my gosh, just disaster. Put tile in, dramatic change. Also dramatic change in farm income and a dramatic reduction in hours for all of our equipment and for all of our people. So anyway, I'd just say, I'll put it this way. I cannot say enough good things about drain tile. Granted, you got to follow, you know, a few basic guidelines so you do it right. But when you do, it's amazing. All right, let's get to the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's the mailbag.
All right, first question comes in from Wesley. He said, hey guys, got some soil samples back from Kinsey Ag. I'm foliar fertilizing every cut in my alfalfa, and I'm adding my production tonnage on here so you can see that I'm raising some pretty good tonnage, but I'm not moving my soil numbers very much. Last year, I put out 450 pounds of DAP, 450 pounds of K-Mag. My foliar is a 666 with a micro blend. And this year, I started with 475 pounds of ammonium sulfate, mez, potash, a little bit of sulfur and zinc mix. So anyway, my plans are to make this application three times along with the foliar. Kinsey says no potash. I should use sulfate of potash. Just curious, what are your thoughts on this? That's obviously more expensive.
Okay, couple of things. First of all, I find it interesting. His opening statement is how a lot of people feel. Well, I'm throwing all kinds of fertilizer out there and I'm still not getting ahead. It's sometimes hard to wrap our minds around how amazing some of our yields are today. I want you can look this up yourself. Look at the Ag PhD Fertilizer Removal app. And I want you to think about not just your average on your farm. I want you to think about your top 10%. The top 10% of your corn acres, like the top 10% on our farm, we're getting almost 300 bushel corn, or about 300 bushel corn. Top 10% on soybeans, 100 bushel soybeans. Look at what 300 bushel corn and 100 bushel soybeans take out of the ground in a two-year cycle, assuming you leave all the residue in the field. And like for us, we're taking corn silage off, so we're taking more than that. Oh my goodness, it is a staggering figure. And it's the same thing with alfalfa. We raise a bunch of alfalfa too. You have to have it loaded up in the beginning if you're not going to put a lot on as you go through the years with your alfalfa stand. And quite frankly, that's the way I prefer, load it up in the beginning. Okay, so what do we think of putting all this fertility on? Yeah, I can see in your soil tests, I mean, most everything is low. And the key things are low. Phosphorus and potassium are the two key nutrients for alfalfa, and you're way low, so you got to put more on. I'd also say, and I find it interesting here, and I'm kind of chuckling at this just because we have fields that have been exactly like yours, where I look at the micronutrients and Neil Kinsey says, put boron on and iron sulfate and manganese sulfate and copper sulfate and zinc sulfate and sodium molybdate and copper sulfate. Yeah, we've been there. I know it can get a little bit frustrating, but you get some of these nutrients up and you're going to be in good shape for a long time. Because once your zinc is up, once your copper is up, all those micronutrients, your crop doesn't use a whole lot. But you got to get those in balance in your soil first. Then you can do maintenance once you get there. So I believe him when he's telling you, hey, you need to do all these things because I see what your soil tests are and they're really low. And then finally, as far as the potassium chloride versus potassium sulfate question, Neil does talk a lot about potassium sulfate. And I mean, he's spoke at right at our Ag PhD Field Day site many times now, has been hosting a workshop almost every year for many years. He's great. We talk about this exact question, and he just says, look, you can go potassium chloride, but at least maybe try some potassium sulfate if it's not too cost prohibitive. He just feels like in some situations, you might gain a little bit more. On our farm, we feel it is cost prohibitive, and we're putting a lot of potassium chloride on. So I guess I'd at least be trying a little bit of both. But yeah, honestly, on our farm, we're using mostly potassium chloride.
All right. Thanks for the question. Got this comment in from AA. He said, you guys are talking about trying to get a more consistent corn ear size. He said, personally, I think even with an even emergence, I think there will still be differences in ear size because each plant doesn't have the exact same amount of sunlight exposure, moisture, nutrient levels all the way across in every area of the field.
Well, true, but we're just trying to even them up as much as we can. There's only so much we can control, though. You're absolutely right.
Be taking your calls and questions throughout the show today at 844-44-AG-PHD or by email radio@agphd.com. We're going to talk about doing some tiling work in crop on today's program. Stay tuned.
Farming comes with trade-offs. An extra pass means dinner in the cab. An early morning becomes a late night. Unnecessary restrictions turn into headaches. But when you make Enlist herbicides the foundation of your herbicide program, the trade-offs will be in your favor. Effective weed control that's ready to work when you are. Flexible tank mix options and neighbor-friendly applications. All without the need to jump through hoops. See what you'll gain with America's most trusted herbicide system protecting your Enlist E3 soybean fields at Enlist.com.
When it comes to fungal diseases like soybean white mold and STS, you know how devastating yield loss can be. That's why you work with your seed dealer to find the best genetics for your farm. Did you know you can bring forward the defensive traits of those genetics with a seed treatment? Heads up, a biological plant activator primes your seed to turn on its natural defense against disease. This spring, take your yields to the finish line. Ask your seed dealer for a Heads Up seed treatment.
On your farm, you spend thousands on fertilizer every season. But how do you know if any nutrient you apply is paying for itself? Build a fertility plan like never before with Verify. With Verify's soil point to yield analysis, you can automatically see the connection between your soil test and yield data to see which fertilizer dollars will make you money and which won't. Go to verify.com to get started today. That's VRAFY.com.
Warning, high yields incoming. Upgrading your planter with Germinator closing wheels can increase your corn yields by 13 bushels in no-till and 7 bushels in conventional. Are your bins ready? Call Farm Shop MFG at 712-520-6051.
Tame tough weeds with a pre-plant application of Revitan, a powerful burn-down herbicide. Revitan drops the hammer on more than 50 species of tough weeds with great tank mix compatibility and low use rates. Learn more at helmcrop.com/Revitan. Always read and follow label directions.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. We're discussing drain tile work in crop. And I know a lot of times folks say, well, wait a second, don't I do that after harvest? that would be ideal. In the north, though, we have something called winter. And sometimes there's a lot of snow out in fields. There's frost that gets deep. That can be a real challenge. And, of course, no matter where you're at, there's some seasons that the weather's just a little bit better and more conducive to get things done, and other times where it's pretty difficult. So we're talking about doing some tiling when there's crop in the ground, and we've done that a bunch on our farm. So we'll discuss that as well throughout the show. Let's head down to Tennessee. Got Philip Reed with Reed's Farm Drainage with us right now. How you doing, Philip?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good, good. Thanks for joining us today. You know, one of the tough things about being a tile contractor is everybody wants it done at the exact same time. And they would all love to have you do it when the crop's not in the ground, but there is physically no way to get that all done. Yeah. So you're stuck to do a little bit in crop. Talk to us about that a little bit. How do you make those calls, and what are you willing to do in crop, and what do you recommend not doing in crop?
Yeah, so everybody wants to be the first one in line. You know, they want to have their tile installed right after the crop, and unfortunately you can only do so much. As far as tiling through crop, we don't see a whole lot of that here. Our windows are a whole lot bigger than you guys. I have tiled some in full mature standing beans, standing wheat, never in any corn. And basically, it's up to the farmer. You know, I don't push it one way or another. If they're willing to sacrifice a little bit of a few bushels of loss, then they know the benefits of the tile. And if they can get me there at a certain time, then they'll throw everything else to the side and say, you know, tell me to go for it. But as far as do I deal with it a lot? We don't deal with that a whole lot here, but we do, you know, about once or twice a year, you know.
Sure, sure. Now let me ask you this question, Philip, because this is a little debate that's been going on with some friends. That, well, how come everybody wants tiling done right after the wet year? But if it's been dry for a few years, like we've been in this drought for like 3 years here, and all of a sudden there's a lot of guys who are like, I guess the tiling isn't such a big deal. They forget about it, and all of a sudden then we have a wet year, everybody remembers, and everybody wants to get it all done, and then nobody can get it done because the contractors are all booked up. Do you see that same kind of surge of demand when you get those wet years in Tennessee?
Yes and no. You know, the first time I was on your show, you know, I was talking about how new tiling was in the South to the extent that we're doing it. And, a lot of farmers around here, you know, you still have to sell tile to them. You still have to explain to them how it works. This was less than a month ago. I was talking to some guys. They said, well, all you're doing is taking all the water out of the ground. I don't want to get rid of all my water. I said, I'm not getting rid of all your water. You know, and then you have to educate them on why and how tile works. So, you know, you go through the paces of the educating side of it, and then you let them make the decision. But as far as do I see a heavier, you know, influx of tile during a wet year? To the new guys, yes. To the tried and true believers of tile, no. They know, yes, it was wet this year, it's going to be dry next year. Even on a dry year, the guys who are sold on tile and believe in tile, they see the benefits of it. They see that, hey, we can get in the field sooner. They see obviously you're going to have excellent yield results from tile, but they see the benefits of everything else that it does for their ground and for their crops and for the soil health and just everything. And the true believers, they'll tile every year. The ones that have been kind of on a cliffhanger going, I can't make up my mind if I want to try it or not. I don't know if I want to spend that kind of money. On a wet year, they find that's what pushes them over the edge. That's what finally makes their mind up going, yes, I'm going to try it. And as time goes, like I said, down here, it's not like in the Central United States where everybody tiles. Here you're still trying to, like I said, you're still trying to educate and explain why we do this. And so, yes, I do have my believers 365. Year in and year out, they're going to tile. Then you have the non-believers that maybe or may not be as aggressive. So.
Yeah, I think that's a fair statement. And I would say even in areas where tiling is more established, there are some guys, like I would take my brother, for example, if he picked up a new piece of ground, if he didn't have to do any dirt work anyway, he didn't have to fix any field approaches, anything like that, he'd be like, all right, let's get the tile rolling as soon as we can because we know the benefit. And yeah, even if we go into a drought for 3 years and the tile doesn't even run, I'll feel much better if I got it in the ground. I know I'm going to be successful. And that's kind of one of the reasons we're talking about this tiling in crop today too, is just some guys just know, hey, I got to get it done. And like you mentioned, even if I have to run over a little bit of crop, give up a few bushels one time ever, I've got the tile on the ground, it's done. And it is a way to jump into the front of the line too, if you're willing to have that done. Hey, Phil.
Yeah, and
oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. Go ahead. Keep.
Well, and you know, even though you're tiling through a crop, On my machine, I run an inner drain, and I'm not making any plugs or whatever. They're all great machines. But we have a backfiller that we drag behind the plow as we're tiling. And that's been one of the best investments I've ever made because it's a one pass. We don't have to go in there and work it down. So even if we're tiling through a standing crop, for the most part, the combine can still come in there in the fall and harvest the crop that wasn't damaged without the risk of sucking up, you know, chunks of dirt into the header. So if you got a good contractor that knows what they're doing and is, you know, particular about how they install, and the crew has a game plan of how to destroy the least amount of crop, you know, it's not a bad idea because bushel for bushel, on the acres that you on the crop that you destroy, you probably lose more on the in rows or next to a tree line than you do with the plow ring. But with today's prices and the inputs being sky high and the commodity kind of struggling, some guys need every bushel that they can possibly get. So,
yeah, that's for sure. Well, you took away one of the biggest objections guys have to doing it in crop. Oh, I'm going to have this ridge out there with big chunks, and it's going to make a mess. It's going to make it harder to combine. And you know what? There could be that issue, and it's just a one-year deal till you're able to clean things up after harvest. But doing a little something like dragging a backfill-type tool behind the plow is a pretty creative way to solve that all in one shot. We're talking with Philip Reed here. Tiling is relatively new in his area in Tennessee compared to some areas of the country, but really starting to take a foothold when guys see the results that they're getting. Philip, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on, and good luck to you this season.
Thanks. Appreciate you calling.
You bet. We're talking about tiling in crop. If you've got an experience you'd like to share with us, our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. If you've got questions along the way, we'd be happy to take those as well. You can also email us, radio@agphd.com. And, you know, Brian, that's one thing that Philip talked about there is just, yeah, when you're pulling through with the plow, especially depending on what the soil conditions are, but say you're in a drought like we've been the last few years and the soil's kind of hard, you could have some chunks behind that plow that 1 year that you might have to wait till after harvest.
It's a one-time deal, though. It's just like tearing up the crop. And I'm dead serious when I tell you this, that we've done hundreds of acres in-crop tiling, and I don't think we lost any yield. And you might say, oh, come on, you had to have lost some. No, we were not in our best areas, keep in mind. And we tiled really early in crop. Again, when the crop is less than a foot tall, we really don't tear up much. And that tile, it improves your drainage going way out from where that tile line is. But yeah, it's a one-time deal. Then you're good for hopefully the rest of the time you farm. Stay tuned. We'll talk a little more about tiling right after this.
Right now at CNB, get 0% financing for 72 months on select John Deere compact utility tractors, riding mowers, and gators. Hurry, offer ends April 30th, 24. Visit DeereEquipment.com. Restrictions apply. See dealer for details.
Get more durability for less downtime with Soil Warrior strip tillage from Environmental Tillage Systems. Improve fertilizer efficiency and reduce passes and fuel usage. Now that's ROI. Learn more about ETS at soilwarrior.com.
If you look close enough, you can see the hidden potential within your fields. That's why an agro-liquid nutrition plan starts with the crop and identifies the precise combination of primary nutrients while focusing on the support of secondary and micronutrients. So every nutrient is working in harmony for your crop to reach its full potential, maximizing growth while offering lower use rates. Apply less, expect more? Precisely. Find an agro-liquid dealer at agroliquid.com.
Morton Buildings has served the American farmer for more than 120 years. From manufacturing our own building components to constructing your building, Morton takes pride in being the industry leader in post-frame construction by providing a quality building and exceptional customer service. A Morton is built to last for generations. To get started on your next project, please visit MortonBuildings.com.
Every season, you're collecting yield data on virtually every acre of your farm. But what good is your data if you never use it? Put it to work with Verify. Verify takes yield data directly from your combine and instantly generates variable rate fertility maps based on crop removal, ensuring your crops get what they need, right where they need it, no matter what equipment you run. Go to verify.com to find an expert to help you get started. That's VRAFY.com.
My mom's got a new Case IH tractor, and it can do it all. Bale hay all day. See in the dark with its powerful LED lights. Hook up all the implements. Shift like a race car, steer with ease. And it can also cool my juice box. Yeah, her Case IH tractor can do everything she needs it to.
Looking for a tractor that can do it all? Check out CaseIH.com.
The hard-working, independent spirit of rural America can often be isolating. It's not often discussed, but mental health issues are real. Now's the time to lead by example, talk openly, and show that a strong mind is just as important as a strong body. FMC is proud to be working toward ending the misconceptions around mental health. Through awareness, guidance, and action, together we can uproot the stigma.
Listening to Ag PhD Radio, talking about doing some tiling work in crop and taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. Got Tim Kilmer with us right now with Horsepower Drainage. How you doing, Tim?
Very good.
All right, so we're talking about tiling in crop, and I thought it was interesting. We had Philip Reed on first, and he was saying that everybody wants to be at the front of the list, but there's quite a few guys that'll say, well, why don't you wait till after harvest for me? And it does give other guys a chance to move up on the list if they're willing to do it in crop.
You know, we've got two different Wolf plows, and one of them has an option that the other one doesn't. One plow has the option of a V plow, which is a lower disturbance way to put in 3 and 4 inch tile. And if I tell a grower we can come in with this in short beans or short corn, and it that ground just feeds through that V and lays it back down, and in most cases all those short sampling or, you know, short plants all survive that, and they really don't lose much, and it lays it down. There's not a ridge. It's just, you know, if you can, you know, the thing, the design doesn't always go with the rows though. That's the thing. So that's why the V being the V doesn't leave a ridge. That's where a lot of tiling doesn't always necessarily make sense with the way you plant it. So if it's a V where it doesn't leave a ridge, that helps a lot. That's the one thing. That's a tool. It's a tool in a contractor's cabinet that you can have to give a guy an option.
You know, that's
now,
a, that's a great
plow doesn't that's have
a,
that.
That's a great thing to point out, Tim, is talking with your contractor about what are the options here. Are there different ways that you can do it? And the other thing I can imagine, too, for guys is they probably want to say, okay, let's see a field that you've done or talk to somebody else that you've done already. And if you've got a low disturbance way of doing that, that's a pretty good selling point.
It's not like different soil types go through that V differently. And depending on, but, and the thing that makes the disturbance is when a straight leg goes through the ground, it's kind of compressing. It's kind of a violent way it goes through the ground. But a V just kind of cuts through almost, I don't know, cheese cutter or something. I mean, it just cuts. It doesn't make all that compressing and smearing as it goes through. And it's just very kind of delicately going through and placing that tile on the ground, and it's just a lot nicer fit and finish and everything. I don't have any closers that I have to go over it. From a contractor side of things, it saves me a lot of time and stuff because I don't have to close nothing. I don't have to do anything afterwards. I put the tile in and I'm done.
Yeah, that's pretty nice, especially when you don't want to make another trip out there during the, or, you know, in the field that season because you already have crop out there. And the other thing is just from the standpoint of harvest, and we get a lot of questions about that. Am I going to be able to harvest? You mentioned that the tile runs don't always go with the rows, and obviously you've got mains, you've got laterals that you're running, things are going different directions, and having a low disturbance method of getting it done is a pretty nice way to take some of that issue out of it. Talking with Tim Kilmer here with Horsepower Drainage. Tim, thank you so much. We really appreciate having you on today. Got Jeremy Miners with us right now with Agrum to talk a little about tiling in crop as well. How you doing, Jeremy?
Doing well. How are you and Brian, or how are you guys doing today?
We're doing pretty well. We're doing pretty well. Brian, if we had tiling to do, he'd want us to be doing it today, I'm sure, because conditions are pretty good out in the field. We've done a lot of tiling in crop over the years. I'm sure you get that question, too, about when is the best time to tile and can I at least put my mains in crop or something like that. So lots of different ways for guys to get it done.
Absolutely true. Being a designer, my bit of advice is to have a plan beforehand and put in, if you have the opportunity to have a contractor to put it in during the summer months, I'd shoot for something like putting your mains in. That way you're, getting yourself totally set up for fall, if that's when you're going to do the bulk of your pattern design installation. The mains, of course, are the most difficult part of a tile system to install, and summer months are the best times in terms of conditions and availability for contractors, if you're having it done that way, to be able to get that tile in. And it really, you can use those summer months to get yourself well prepared for the fall season, if that's where you plan to put in the bulk of your tile.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I just think about jumping in those holes and trying to make connections when it's really, really cold outside. It's not very fun to get all wet and muddy, but if it's 80 degrees out, I don't mind that at all. In fact, it might be a good thing.
You guys have said multiple times that it's really fun to actually be putting your tile in right after planting. And I think I've thought about that. And I think that really does get to that miserable condition. So here in Illinois, we oftentimes in late fall, we'll get that temperature that's right between 31 and 34 degrees. We've got moisture in the ground. And when you get out there and you're actually sitting in that hole making your sets, you end up with maybe 2 or 3 inches of water down there at the bottom of the hole. And you're standing in mud 10 hours that day from, sunrise, sunset. It's really miserable. Compare that to an 80 degree day.
Yes.
I think that's where you get the fun from.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you get a lot of questions about design work too, and I know you get to work on this, and it's fun to help guys out. There are a lot of different ways you could do things. I'm sure you get a lot of feedback from farmers. Well, hey, could we do it a little bit different, or could we put the outlet over here instead of over there? And it seems like there's a lot of flexibility as you put these plans together.
There is. Everything is going to be field dependent to some degree, but probably the the biggest goal for any design we do is that we match it to what the desires of the farmer is. So if they're looking for a complex system that, there's going to be able to be used for something like controlled drainage or sub-irrigation, well, we can work on that. But if it's really kind of like, well, I would prefer to drain to this location because it's easier for me to access versus that one, those types of modifications can be done as long as it fits the topography. When it comes to being able to put tile in during the summer months and disturb the crop as little as possible, those types of modifications can be made as long as they're being done beforehand and there's a plan. Just hopping out in the field and doing it, that can be a little bit more difficult.
Yeah, that's for sure. Now, you know, the other thing that we get questions on, and here's one of the exciting things when you're doing it in crop, is sometimes if the water table is high at that time of year, you might have tie lines running right away. You might be in a situation where we were the last few years here where you could literally dig down 10 feet and not find water. So it might be one of those where, tile isn't going to work at all right now because we don't need it to. But when that water table's high, you might see instant results doing that in the summer.
Oh, absolutely. It really depends on what that year's like. And even if it's a situation where you're not hitting water when you're installing the pipe, that actually just makes it more of a better work environment. Makes it a little bit more fun that way.
Well, there's a lot of things that go into to tile design and tile insulation. And one that we're talking about today is getting that done in the crop in the summer and hopefully some nice weather. And we've got Jeremy Miners on right now with Agrum talking about that. Jeremy, thank you so much. You're always so so kind to give us your time and insight. Really appreciate it.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you so much, too.
You bet. Brian, other drawbacks, I guess people are like, well, you're going to run over crop or you're going to leave a ridge out in the field. Is there anything else that's scary about getting it done in crop? I just like the idea of getting it done now rather than having to wait. And this fall might not be good weather. It might be 2 years or more before I get it done if I don't do it now.
It all comes back to time management. And for a lot of people, I mean, just about everybody, hey, we're busy. I get it. You're trying to get the spraying done. You're trying to finish up planting, all these other things that are going on. Here's kind of how we've done it. We've tried to get the pre-emerge herbicides on before we plant. A lot of times we do those in the fall or in March or something like that. Then we plant, and then right after planting, before we spray our post herbicides, we probably have 2 or 3 weeks in some cases. So that's the time that we're usually tiling. Get it done early, in crop, works well. We're going to get back to your questions in the Ag PhD mailbag right after this.
Are you ready for better efficiency, more productivity, higher yields? Then you're ready for John Deere Precision Technology, which starts with three core pieces. First, a G5 display gives fast views of your work and a window to future technology. A Starfire receiver gives you sub-inch repeatable accuracy without an RTK base station. And a JD Link modem gives you a live view of your entire operation. Get precise and talk with your John Deere dealer or visit johndeere.com/basic.
Nothing but net. Win your soybean season with the fast knockdown and lasting broad spectrum control of Elevest Insect Control from FMC. Take on army worms, stink bugs, soybean loopers, and more with the maximized ratio of premier active ingredients for better overall control of more than 40 labeled pests. Visit your FMC retailer or elevest.ag.fmc.com to up your game this season. Always read and follow all label directions.
Maverick Corn Herbicide from Valent USA has proven to be a key part of growers' success in fighting problematic weeds. But don't take it from us. Take it from agronomy manager Nate Honeck.
We've seen tremendous weed control that was sprayed in dry, hot conditions with very little rain within 2 weeks after application. Very easy application. Definitely tank mix well with the various products we used.
Visit valent.com/maverick to learn more about Maverick Corn Herbicide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Your farm's greatest challenge is making sure your crop has enough fertility to reach its yield goals. But how do you know if you're applying too much of any one nutrient? Fine-tune your fertility plan with Verify. Your combine collects hundreds of yield data points per acre. Verify takes that data and instantly generates variable rate fertility maps based on crop removal, so you can be confident you're not over-applying. Get started today at verify.com. That's VRAFY.com.
Because the challenges you face are getting bigger every year, BASF is committed to helping with more than boots on the ground. We're committed to boots in the mud, boots on the steps of your truck, your tractor, your combine, the linoleum tiles of your coffee shop, the concrete of your co-op, the gravel in your shed. So we can listen, learn firsthand, help right now to ensure success. BASF, helping you do the biggest job on earth.
It's smart to make the right agronomic choices, and it's even smarter to get rewarded for them. With the Bayer Plus Rewards program, you earn cash back on seed, herbicides, and other eligible products. And it keeps getting smarter, because now you can earn an additional 10% bonus when you send your redemption check to your retailer. To learn more, contact your retailer today. Protect your yields and get the most from your land with Bayer Plus Rewards. Visit mybayerplus.com and see program terms and conditions for full details.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, talking about drain tile and taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. Got Keith Romer with us right now with Dry Run Drainage down in Iowa. Keith, how you doing?
Pretty good. Yourself, Darren?
Well, I'm doing well, and I'm just wondering, you know, we had a pretty nice winter for the most part. Were you able to keep going all through the winter, or do you guys shut down for a little while, work on equipment and stuff?
Yeah, no, it got cold enough. We only got the first week of January, then we called it quits and started back up middle of March there. We had a nice little early spring, so.
Yeah, March was fantastic for that. And, you know, even April, we've had some spotty rains here and there. I've heard some guys in not too far from you that had 4 inches of rain out of this last shot. But what are you seeing? Were you dry enough that things are drying up pretty quick?
Yeah, you know, we coming out of a drought for a few years, needed the moisture. And, we had some great rainfall here not that long ago. And fortunately, we only got around the 2-inch mark, but it was greatly appreciated. Seeing a lot more moisture in the soils and tile water moving, and starting to see wet spots again, which last few years have been few and far between with the drought.
Well, you know, I'd say this. A lot of folks say, "Well, man, well that part of Iowa, guys have got a lot of tiling done already, but it seems like there's still a lot of guys that need to split lines that they didn't have lines close enough together, or their lines are 100 years old and they need to be replaced. Are there still some fields that guys haven't even started tiling in yet, or are you mostly fixing or upgrading tile lines right now?"
Well, I'd say a majority have some tile work of some sort in it, you know, but the extent, you know, great grandpa may have done was one or two lines. And so there's a lot of adding on tile and then just replacing, like you said, systems that are over 100 years old. Sometimes we just go in and redo a whole grid pattern and fix it all up with new. And sometimes we get those 100-year-old systems and we work with them. So it just kind of all depends. We have a lot around here, and if you hit one you're not aware that's there, which happens often, it can make for some interesting head scratching.
Do you get called for tiling in crop? I know at times you get backed up, you just get a lot of demand, and of course everybody wants it done right now. But are there guys willing to do it in crop?
You know, in the wet years, like 19 was a good one. We had a fair amount of customers who were willing to do that. Primarily, I do my own in crop, it seems. The customer projects get done and then crops in, and here we are needing to finish our own work. So I've done a bit, and it's amazing how, you know, even a foot to 18-inch tall corn I've gone through. And come back in the fall to harvest it, and the only visible mark is where the plow itself ran. You know, the tracks, the pickup that ran tile next to it, it all recovered. And then, of course, it's in there for however many years it's going to last. So,
yeah, that's the big thing. Tile lasts so long, and it's literally you're putting it in for at least a generation if it's done right and everything turns out well for you. And hopefully it could be several generations long. We've seen a lot of tile lines that are 100 years old that are still working. So if you run into one of those, that's a great situation. It seems like an easy investment at that point. As you're doing tiling work for guys this year, interest rates up, lots of different expenses on the farm. Are you hearing guys talk about that much, or is it just, no, the return on investment on tile is just so predictable that I just got to get it done?
Yeah, I mean, I think definitely the high interest rates and lower commodity prices has slowed some projects, but overall there's a good knowledge of return on investment is with tile. And so, you know, we've had a fair amount of projects, although I would say it with a combination of drought and higher prices has slowed the calls, but it still stays busy. And of course, it's a lot easier in the drier years to get things done. And so we try to encourage that, but you got to deal with what the customer is wanting to spend. So.
Yeah, there's a lot of decisions when it comes to putting tile in the ground. And generally on our farm, we're thinking the most important decision is how quickly can we get it out there, because we really want to get that done. I'm glad you're finally getting some moisture down in your area, Keith. And I just wish you the best this season heading into things. Stay safe and get a lot of tile in the ground. We want to see those yields keep going up.
All right. Thank you. Have a safe spring yourself.
You bet. Brian, had a lot of questions that have come in here too, and a lot of them end up being around weed control. We got one in that from Derek here, and he said, I'm curious about bristly foxtail. I saw your Weed of the Week video, and I was just kind of curious. Glyphosate works nice, but could I mix a group 2 or a group 1 with that and hopefully get some residual control as well? You know, I was just thinking about this with bristly foxtail. It's a little bit different. It generally comes in just a little later than some of the other foxtail species. A lot of times we'll see green foxtail be out there first, and bristly comes in a little later. It's the one that's got, I would say, backwards pointing little barbs on the leaves, so it catches on clothing more. You'll see that where you have a foxtail head stuck to your leg. It's often bristly foxtail. Many times it's a bunch grass, so it's tough to kill post-emerge if you don't get it when it's small.
People call different things bristly foxtail. Tell me your quick story, Dan.
Well, I just saw in Massachusetts, somebody was talking about bristly foxtail being a perennial and having rhizomes, and that is not, it's in the Ceteria genome, but it's not the same one. So yeah, the bristly foxtail we fight here is typically a summer annual weed.
Right. So this becomes part of the challenge. And you know how it is if you listen to the show at all, or if you've talked to farmers from around the country or around the world. In different regions, we say things differently. We also call weeds different names sometimes. So we want to make sure that we're talking about the same weed you're talking about. Like Darren said, the bristly foxtail we deal with, that is an annual weed. It's really not all that difficult to control, but it depends on what crop we're talking about. So when we say, oh, we want to throw an ALS herbicide in there, or one of the products like, let's say, Clethodim or something like that, I mean, why? What do you need it for if Roundup's already killing it? So anyway, I'm just curious what crop we're dealing with. So if you've got more specifics on that, let us know. But as a general statement, I'll put it this way. Any foxtail that there is, you start with something usually group 15 if that's possible in whatever crop you're raising. But if it's soybeans, I mean, we'd want to go with a yellow. And then you follow post-emerge with whatever will kill it in that trait, in that crop. So is Clethodim good? Sure it is. Is Roundup good? Absolutely it is. I mean, it just depends on your situation.
All right. I got one that came in from EDB. And first of all, he says, thank you for answering a previous question that he had. Really appreciates that. He said, I've been growing winter wheat for a long time up in western New York. And in the past 10 years, he said, I've really come to learn how finicky winter wheat can be if you're trying to get good yields. This winter, for example, we were unusually warm, 30 to 40 degrees most of the winter, with exceptions of just a couple of cold spells. But we were warmer and drier in March. And it was too early to be putting nitrogen out there. We were worried about loss. But then April has been cool and wet, and we'd like to get the nitrogen on now, but you can't even walk across the lawn. It's like walking on a sponge, and the wheat's getting a little bit yellow.
Right.
What do you recommend in that spot?
You might have to fly it on. I mean, this is always the challenge. So we want to be timely, but we're always trying to work with what Mother Nature gives us. So we say it often here on the show, with fertility, be early. If it's nitrogen, use a stabilizer. Use a controlled release nitrogen. Use ammonium sulfate that breaks down over 30 or 60 days rather than maybe urea entirely for all of your program that would be available just about today. So there are different strategies you can use to help improve this situation, but yeah, I mean, we've worked with a lot of people over the years that, I mean, they couldn't get into the field for a long time. So what do you do? you have to fly some stuff on, and it's more costly that way, but that's the way it goes. You got to say, all right, this happened to me this year. I'm going to try to avoid this next year. And that would be our advice, again, is use some controlled release stuff or something, or stabilizer, something. So at least you're always ahead a little bit.
If you have a question, our phone lines will be open at 844-44-AG-PHD, and you can always send us an email, radio@agphd.com. We'll dive back into some more of those questions as the Ag PhD mailbag time continues right after this. Stay tuned.
Weeds rob you of yield potential, so rob them of the chance to grow with powerful corn herbicide solutions from Corteva Agriscience. Weeds won't know what hit them, but you will, because you can count on proven top herbicides like Resicor or SureStart 2 or the new game-changing herbicide Cairo to effectively control weeds. That way, you spend less time worrying about unwanted yield-robbing weeds and have more time to power on with your day. Learn more at PowerOverWeeds.com.
It's smart to make the right agronomic choices, and it's even smarter to get rewarded for them. With the Bayer Plus Rewards program, you earn cash back on seed, herbicides, and other eligible products. And it keeps getting smarter, because now you can earn an additional 10% bonus when you send your redemption check to your retailer. To learn more, contact your retailer today. Protect your yields and get the most from your land with Bayer Plus Rewards. Visit mybayerplus.com and see program terms and conditions for full details.
Here at Ag PhD, we're always looking for ways to support the next generation in the ag industry. That's why at our free Ag PhD Scouting and Scholarships event on Saturday, June 29th, we're giving away more than 100 college scholarships. Join us as we head into the field for hands-on sessions covering everything from how to pull soil and tissue samples, ways to improve crop health, the importance of microbiology in farming, and much more. Plus, in our comprehensive guide to crop scouting, we'll explore both above and below ground in a variety of crops as we diagnose problems with insects, weeds, diseases, and anything else we may find. As we're giving away tens of thousands of dollars in scholarships to eligible attendees, this day is geared more towards students and young farmers, but anyone with a desire to learn more about agronomy is more than welcome. So whether you're a college student or just want good agronomy information, this is one event you won't want to miss. Come to the Ag PhD Scouting and Scholarships Day, Saturday, June 29th on the Hefty Farm near Baltic, South Dakota. Learn more and register at agphd.com.
Get uniform control in your fields with trusted, hardworking Lucento fungicide. Control the toughest diseases with a dual mode of action fungicide that consistently outperforms the competition and field trials. Lucento fungicide from FMC works overtime for lasting control to help improve crop yields. Talk about getting the job done. Visit your FMC retailer or lucento.ag.fmc.com for hardworking control in your fields. Always read and follow all label directions.
Maverick Corn Herbicide from Valent USA has proven to be a key part of growers' success in fighting problematic weeds. But don't take it from us. Take it from farmer Rob Schaefer.
Residuals have become a big part of our chemical programs with trying to battle water hemp, and also mare's tail is our big one. It's done a real good job of controlling those. You don't have to, you know, put a bunch of gallons in your sprayer, cover a lot of acres that way.
Visit Valent.com/Maverick to learn more about Maverick Corn Herbicide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Back, you're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're right in the middle of the Ag PhD mailbag time, taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD, or you can email us radio@agphd.com. Got this one from Lawrence. He farms down in Kansas, and he said, guys, I've emailed you in the past. He said, I'm the old guy planting his first corn crop. Your words, Lawrence, not mine, but yes, I remember getting your emails before. He's just wondering, is corn supposed to look like this really early? And basically, Brian, just describe what we're seeing. He said, I did apply dual in the end of February, along with a pound of atrazine, and then I got no rain since. I've been wanting limited residual so I can plant radishes and oats after the corn is harvested. But just kind of curious.
Oh, Yeah, that's going to be a problem. But anyway, go ahead. We'll talk about
that.
The
soil was dry when I planted, but we had a half inch of rain, and then I planted at 2 inches, and it was just the best ever seed bed. But then we had 3 days. It was really nice and warm, and the ground dried out an inch up at the top. And these pictures are a couple days after that ground started drying back out. Just kind of curious what you think.
Yeah, corn looks pretty yellow, and there are areas on the leaf, like out at the edge, it's a little more green, and down toward the whorl, it's a little more yellow. So what were you going to say there?
Sent his Malik 3 soil test results there, too, that you could look at. And he's got fertility. He put fertility out there. We just need some sunshine and some warm days a lot of times to green up crop early on in the season.
The thing is, it only says 26 pounds of nitrogen. So
he put on below that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there we go. Oh, okay. So he did put some on, got rain. Yeah, so I don't know. It may just be that it's cloudy days and it's cold. So I don't know that I'd get tremendously worried about this, but I also don't know what the history was, what was in there last year, if there could possibly be a herbicide carrying over or anything like that. So if my crop looked like this, I would be asking some questions. And I'm especially interested in what all got done last year and even the year before. Sometimes there are people that apply herbicides. They get told, oh, just go use this herbicide, and they don't get told the downside of that herbicide. Well, the biggest downside risk with a few of these products that are out there is they can last in the soil a long time. So I don't know. I'm not saying it's for sure a carryover issue, but it looks suspicious to me. Let's come back to this dual atrazine thing and wanting to plant radish or oats. Yeah, you're going to hurt your radish and oats with the atrazine. I'm not that worried about the dual. That will be gone, and the atrazine could be gone, but 1 pound is a lot. So, first of all, I never, ever recommend a pound of atrazine down. I don't like that in the soil. Too much risk for groundwater contamination. But carryover is a big concern, especially if your pH is high. So if your pH is over 7 and you put on this pound of atrazine in the spring, I would feel like there's a 90% chance your radishes and oats will be hurt to some degree. Now, here's the good news. It's a cover crop. It doesn't have to be perfect. So a lot of people get kind of hung up on, well, I don't want to use much for pre-emerge herbicides or residual herbicides because I want my cover crop to do well. Why? What are we so worried about the cover crop for? If it does halfway as well, it's going to accomplish the goals that you have. Now, if you are trying to get a second crop, that's a whole different deal. For example, if you wanted to graze, people call it a cover crop. It's not a cover crop when you're grazing it. That is a second cash crop because you are getting income off that with your livestock. So by cover crop, all I'm talking about is something that's literally out there to hold the soil, maybe build organic matter. That's it. No other benefit from that at all. And if you kill off half your oats or radishes and it was just a cover anyway, you probably still have enough left to prevent erosion and possibly to build up your soil a little bit. So I'm not that worried about that. But yeah, pound of atrazine, that's quite a bit. That's more than I'd do.
All right. Thanks for the question, Lawrence. Good luck to you. I got a couple of soil tests here, Brian. Just as a reference, this comes in from Johan, who said, hey, guys, I'm an agronomist up in southeast Alberta. You guys talk about the rainfall you're getting. Well, we've been in the worst drought this area has seen. We're getting 3 to 4 inches of rain per year the past 4 years. Just terrible. Our wheat has been 20 to 25 bushels. Canola, 5 to 8 bushels. Just been a terrible drought. On average, the soils aren't too bad on fertility, but of course, when farmers aren't getting any income, they don't want me grid soil sampling, even though I know the benefits of that. So I just sent you a couple of the composite tests that they had. The first guys up here just started seeding last week. Most of the guys will be going this coming week, but I got a few questions. First of all, how do you justify the cost of grid zone sampling when you're in a super dry area like this?
Yeah. First of all, drought is always relative. We've been talking about drought. We've still been getting annually, call it 15, 18 inches of precip. That's way more than what you're getting. So we definitely feel for you. As far as how do you justify the cost of, quite frankly, anything on your farm, you've got to have a return on investment somewhere along the lines. So we really do like grid soil sampling. I want you to think about it this way. Let's say you took 1/10 of your acres each year and you did grid soil sampling. You don't have to do it to the level we do, but we really like 1-acre grids. And then for the other 9 years, or for the next 9 years, you just put out exactly what you removed. There is software now, you can do it. It costs $1 an acre is what we're using. It's called Verify, and it'll take our yield map, and then we can just go put out the fertilizer we just removed. And if you wanted to do that over, let's say it's the last 2 years, so you fertilize every other year, whatever. The point is, you could go that way, and then you aren't doing all that much soil testing. You're testing 1/10 of your acres every year. That would be an option. I'm not saying, oh, everybody should do it only once every 10 years. I'm simply saying, here is an option. Here's just one way you could think about it if you're in this super dry area and you're really concerned about the dollars, because we really do want you to soil test. Otherwise, you're just guessing on all your nutrients. Here's the next thing. In a super dry area, your fertility program is more important than mine. And mine is more important than a farmer in Illinois who gets 40 inches of rain, for example. And let me tell you why. Because if your crop runs short on any one nutrient, you know what that crop's going to do? It's going to start pulling in more water. It's going to be wasting water, seriously, because that's how nutrients get into the plant. So on your soil test here, I'm looking at your phosphorus levels that are really low, like single digits, maybe 15, whatever. That is part of the reason why your crop is pulling water in early in the season. So even though it might not need water then, it's so desperate for that phosphorus. It's like, I got to do something here. I got to pull in water. It's also really short on zinc. You're at like 1 or 2 parts per million on zinc. Sulfur is low. Copper is maybe a little bit on the low side. Boron is low. So you get those nutrients up to where they need to be and balanced, and you're going to be in a lot better shape. So that's a really, really important thing. And I know it's hard to justify these things. So I will put it this way. So I was in high school and in college back in the 80s. Back during the farm crisis. And our dad often talked to us about, you know, times are tough. I can't spend on everything I would like to. But when I get a good year, that's when putting that soil fertility out there, it's kind of like putting money in the bank. Because if you get those nutrients up to where they need to be, you're going to continue reaping rewards for the future.
Well, here's the other thing. When you aren't making a lot of money, you can't afford to waste. And so if you could do variable rate exactly. application to fix some of these spots, yes. It'd be great. But that was his other question.
He said, which is why the soil testing is important.
Most guys don't have the equipment to do variable rate up here. So how would you approach that? What I would do is I'd start with one smaller field that they think is pretty even, and I'd go out and do some grid sampling out there, and you see the variability, and then you just talk through the dollars and cents of, wow.
You can equip a pole-type fertilizer spreader if you want to for very little money. We did on our farm. We literally, over the last 20 years, converted everything that we had, all the old equipment, everything, over to being able to go variable rate. It's cheaper every single year, that technology. So I get it that a lot of people aren't set up today, but we're going to encourage everybody. Variable rate fertilizer. And I mean, Canada, you're doing even, there's even more going on up there than here in the United States. And it's bad enough here with all these, everybody wants to regulate us as farmers. Well, we got to show all the non-farmers, hey, we're doing everything we possibly can to manage our farms as good as possible. So variable rate is a big part of that.
Thanks for the questions, Johan. Good luck. And thanks to you for listening today. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.